Radio Network.
Saturday at noon on WGTD. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist with the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside, and Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
The Kenosha Public Museum is a natural sciences and fine and decorative arts museum. It first opened to the public in 1936. In most recent years, two additional museums have been added to the mix. Together, they are now known as the Kenosha Public Museums. Hello, welcome to Community Matters. I'm Jane Herring. And today we're going to be learning all about two holiday-themed events happening at the museums today and learn more about each museum's offerings and how they have been and continue to cope with the challenges of operating three very participatory institutions during COVID. So welcome our guests today, Christine Camilli, who is the External Relations Manager, and Lisa Byron, who is the development manager of the Kenosha Public Museums. Hello and welcome. So let's begin with what's exciting happening today. About an hour and 15 minutes ago, you have a special event that's going on. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Yep, absolutely. So here at the Kenosha Public Museum, we have our annual International Holiday event. So we've got several vendors from all over the community selling packaged foods and crafts and gifts from different cultures, including Greece and Lithuania. And we also have musical performances. We've got a Mexican ballet that will be performing a few times throughout the day. And then the German men's chorus is also going to be putting on a concert soon here. And next door at our Civil War Museum, just right at the building right next door, we're celebrating a Victorian Christmas. So again, lots of craft activities, fun for the kids and kids of all ages, really. We've got a dollhouse display from the Victorian era, some miniatures from the Civil War soldier battles, and then some living history reenactors as well. And we're celebrating, we have a free admission today for all visitors at the Civil War Museum. And again, more music, lots of merriment over there too.
It sounds like a great event. And I don't think either one of these is brand new, but I know you try to change it up a little bit each year. Let's start again, go back to the International Holiday Market. Kenosha has long been considered a city rich in a variety of ethnic backgrounds. And it sounds like with this International Holiday Market, you're trying to bring that kind of local heritage as well as introduce people to some of the crafts and the foods of other countries. Is that the point behind the event?
Yep, absolutely. Right. I think so often we think of Kenosha as being this rich Italian culture. And of course, we have representatives from the Italian community. But again, we also have a Muslim group here who will be sharing their culture and their holidays with us. Some of their crafts, their traditional crafts, as well as some of their food as well. Japanese cultures we have a group who will be doing some ikebana floral arranging. They're showing kids and adults too how to actually do the floral arranging, and you get to take your works home.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so a lot of different cultures that really are here in our community here in Kenosha.
Well, it sounds like a neat event. And what you had mentioned with the Civil War Museum's Victorian Christmas, what you were saying about the Victorian dollhouses, that sounds very intriguing to me. And I'm not really into dolls, but the architecture, I would imagine, of the dollhouses must be so intricate.
Right. It's beautiful. It really is a representation of what the big Victorian homes were like. So the different paint colors, the architecture is beautiful on this, on all these dollhouses.
One of the things that I have noticed with the museum's events in the past, year round, you try, it seems like a really interesting combination of learning, doing, eating, and of course, buying. Is that the case with this event? Is it a pretty even representation between that and appealing to all ages?
It is, yes. We really do try and have that hands-on aspect to it. So often in the museum, you're here to look at things, and it's the don't touch the artwork, don't touch the bones. but these events really give an opportunity to say, come in and make your own art, make your own crafts, make. Sometimes we'll have even cooking classes too, where people really get that hands-on experience, not just learning by watching or looking, but really doing as well. And that adds that entertainment aspect to it too.
And we're about to segue into talking about what the three museums offer our community and visitors from outside. But before we do that, I want to make sure people have all the information about the events today on Saturdays, 10 a.m. till 4 p.m., correct?
That's correct. Yep, we'll be here till 4.
Okay. Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. So people have to listen to our interview first, but then they're allowed to go out.
Yes, please.
We were talking a little bit, and you were mentioning how you try to offer those opportunities for experiences. And maybe we can begin with that. Start with basics, because of course we have listeners who are outside of the city of Kenosha or Kenosha County, and they may not be as familiar with the museums as I'm lucky to be and having it practically in my backyard. So if you can tell me a little bit about the three museums, that would be great.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So we're very fortunate that our city of Kenosha has three, like you said, all under one umbrella. So the Kenosha Public Museum, which is the oldest, and it started back in 1936, and it is now in Harbor Park, as we call it, and it encompasses it encompasses all things like art, natural history, anthropology, fossils. Like, it has a full range, and it's for all learners, the whole family to enjoy. Then we have the Dinosaur Discovery Museum, which is in the old Kenosha Public Museum building, and that is west of Sheridan Road, downtown Kenosha. And that
one is near the courthouse, correct?
Correct, yeah. And that definitely is, the Dinosaur Discovery Museum is geared a lot towards the younger kids, I'd say. Yeah,
little kids love dinosaurs.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah, but anybody is welcome to visit, and that one is free to the public as well. And then we have the Civil War Museum, which is the newest one for us, and that is right next to the new Kenosha Public Museum. And that really looks at the Midwest story of the Civil War and how not too many people realize how many people from the Midwest fought in the war or even participated in other ways. And so we really look at that aspect of it at our museum, and we have the 360 movie there as well to show that aspect.
And Lisa, we were saying that just before the explanation of the museums, the fact that there's things to look at and there are things to participate in. And maybe you can tell me a little bit, start with the Civil War Museum. What are ways that people can come to the museum and do something and be part of something besides just watching a movie, perhaps, which is still very interesting. It's just a plain movie, of course.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we are very fortunate that we have just finished renovating our resource center, and that's on the second floor of the Civil War Museum, and that's free for the public as well. It is a way for the whole family and even children to participate and learn and interact with things from the 19th century Civil War era. We have a dress-up area. We have just a lot of interactive, like, reading spaces, schoolroom desks for kids to play at. We have a little log cabin for kids to interact with as well. And it's just a way to get the families to put the phones away and really just learn with their hands and kind of see what history was like. So that's a fun way at the Civil War Museum. Then if you want me to move on to the Kenosha Public Museum, I can.
Well, before we do, one of the things, though, that you also do, and it's not going to be on necessarily a weather day like this time of year, but don't you also have outdoor events, like reenactments or things like that dealing with the Civil War?
We do. A lot of times in the summer, we will bring in some reenactors, and we have in the past even brought in some cannons that people can look at and touch, and then they'll of course fake go off, makes a loud noise. But
we noticed that, yes.
right. So that's always fun too, because then it gives people an opportunity to talk to some of these historians that really really know their history, and they can really reenact and talk to people as if they're the soldier or even a wife of a soldier, a clergyman, and really tell those stories and get personal with our visitors.
And that is exciting, and it's a great way to learn. You know, as I know, teachers and others in the educational world will tell you, some people learn better by reading, some people better by experience. And it's nice. Offer both with the resource room as well as these reenactments and special events. Mm-hmm. When I'll allow you to go on to talk about the public museum and some of the opportunities there.
Yeah, we also have recently just reopened our field station, which is on the first floor of the Kenosha Public Museum. And there's a lot to do in there. In the past, we had a lot of taxidermy and everything, but now it's very hands-on. I don't know if you want to say.
Yeah, so we over here we have a trading post. So it's actually a little house that kids can go into, and they can play trading. We have real furs that they can not only touch, but they can again trade with their friends for toys or different trinkets that they may have done back in the fur trade era. We also
Very
have
cool.
It's fun that the kids love that. And right outside that trading post is a little fishing pond. It's actually a little carpet, but kids will use the little fishing poles to catch the stuffed fish that we have on the floor. That's been really popular too. And then to go along with our exhibit upstairs, which is a cabinet of curiosities, kids can open up all kinds of drawers and find different specimens and bones and fossils and create their own little cabinet of curiosity.
Very nice.
Yeah. And we focus, we have a section also all about art as well. And so that will get changed over every couple months too. So there's always going to be something new for families to find when they come and visit us again.
I do want to talk a lot more about the programming, and we'll come back to that. But you're talking about these very cool things that I think school kids would really enjoy. And then came COVID. Can you, and I, maybe this is a question for you, is how are you managing some of these really interesting things that you've been doing with not being able to do them exactly the same way?
Yeah, it was quite a adjustment for us here at the museums when COVID hit. We did temporary close for about 3 months there. And when we did reopen and it was minimal hours, we had to shut down a lot of our interactives. We're very fortunate that we are slowly kind of bringing them back available to the public. So what we just talked about is all open now. We still have a few things that we're still keeping shut down for safety reasons. But we also have changed a lot of our programming to virtual. So we really, that was out of the gate. We just had to push everything virtual as much as we could. And it was, I think, hundreds of different videos and programs and activities were all on our website and on Facebook. And we had a lot of people thankful that we did that. A lot of it, most of it was free to the public too. Now we are kind of transitioning and we're open 7 days a week again here at our museums. So we have a lot of in-person stuff, but we're also finding a good balance and still providing quite a few options virtually. So it's definitely a work in progress and constant balance for all of us here at the museums.
I can imagine, and much like others in education and many other things, you're almost doing everything twice if you're doing both virtual and in-person. And that's got to be a little bit of a strain on your staff.
Yeah, yes, it has. We have a lot of, all of our staff are just 100% dedicated though to our mission and just being all that we can be so that the community has these resources. So we're just going to keep going and doing what we can to maximize all the opportunities for the community.
I'm kind of curious with the, I know school visits have always been a huge part of the museum's, reason for existing. And the schools, I don't know if they're even back to doing like field trips. Has that been done virtually also, or did it just disappear temporarily?
Right. Well, we have seen a couple schools from outside of the area, mostly coming back in person. But for the most part, it has gone virtual. So that was one of the big initiatives we took on over the last year was converting what was an in-person hands-on type of field trip to more of that virtual program where they get to see one of our educators here at the museum inside of our exhibits with the specimens and talking to them as if they were here. We can send some of our materials to the classroom ahead of time so that it is a little more participatory. But it's really been interesting to navigate through that whole point of a field trip. You're getting outside of the classroom, you're going somewhere new. A lot of kids who've been here for field trips, it was the first time they've been to a museum at all. Mm-hmm. And so now we're still able to reach them and you know, get that new kind of education out to them. But you know, we definitely miss having them in the building. But the hope is that in, you know, what, a year or two or whatever it may be, they'll be back. But at least we're still able to provide that education component to them.
I don't know very much about the dinosaur museum, I'll be honest. Not having kids, I don't get, or grandkids, get dragged away to see dinosaurs very often. So tell me a little bit more about what goes on there, and do you have similar types of both education programs and fun events?
Yeah, we do. It's actually the Dinosaur Museum. We actually have the largest collection of meat-eating theropods on display in the whole nation.
That's nice.
No, that's our big claim. They're all in one room, but I was going to say bite size. It's kind of a little little joke about dinosaurs, but you know, it's small enough for the little kids to get through and not get tired out at all. Another section of another gallery that we have is, again, normally all hands-on for the kids. That's one of the sections that we're not quite ready to open up yet, but that tells the story of baby Clint, which is a baby T-Rex that was actually found out in Montana. We have a great partnership with Carthage College, their paleontology department. And so they bring back bones that then eventually get displayed at the museum, or casts are made to display those bones. And in the lab that we have right at the museum, sometimes some of the Carthage professors and students are actually working. And so visitors get to see them work on those dinosaurs that then kind of translate to coming to a museum.
That sounds really interesting. So when you're saying they see them working on a dinosaur, working on the bones, what kind of work is it? That they're preparing them for display, or what?
They're trying to preserve the bones more. So a lot of times things will come back and, I'm not the expert in paleontology.
No.
Yeah, but from my understanding is, they'll take the casts and they'll try to preserve as much as they can for storage and collections, because our museums are a collection base for all of the specimens that they do bring back. So, and it's great for Carthage and other paleontologists to use for future research as well. So it's really great how such a small museum like our dinosaur museum has such a big impact in the paleontology world. So that's the one thing I think more people need to know about and be proud of. So,
yeah, you're right. It's something I'm sure not many people understand. They think of it as being a fun museum for kids, and not so much that it's a great research base and educational base. So appreciate the information. We talk a lot about the kids and the hands-on programming and the field trips and their opportunity to make things at the special events. But all three of the museums offer something for every age group. And you don't have to necessarily rent a kid to come. You can come as an adult. I always say that since I've never had kids. So you're like, I wish I had a kid I could take with me. But right. I all look so all funny the then. So tell me what you offer for, from an adult standpoint. Talk to me a little bit about your galleries and displays and educational opportunities.
Yeah, there is a lot from everywhere, from exhibits to programming for adults. For right now, some of the big exhibits we have a Chewaukee Prairie photo journal exhibit that is just beyond beautiful, showcasing the Chewaukee Prairie, which is just south of here, just in our own backyard, and just to come see those photographs. And then we also have that artist gallery walk for that exhibit, which is going to be December 11th at 2:00, and that's free for the public as well. And you'll get to join Dr. Dana Garrigan herself as she takes you through the gallery.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. So they will talk about Jabbaki Prairie and what, the plant life there and animal life, and use the photographs as really a walking tour.
Right, exactly. Yep, it's the photos themselves are just gorgeous. But then, yeah, it just basically talks about how important that ecosystem is to this area. And so Dr. Garrigan will really talk about his experiences out there in the prairie.
Okay, and you said that's December 7th?
It's the 11th. It's next 11th. Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah, we also have the Inuit art collection still open to the public as well. And that just showcases some of the prints and sculptures that we have of the Inuit collection here at the museums.
Okay. All right. And we were talking a little bit more about the Civil War Museum, and I have not been in there for a while, so I'm confessing, but I remember when it first opened, there was sort of, you could get on a train.
Right.
And things would happen. Is that still operational, or?
Definitely. So, right, the Civil War Museum, really, what makes it unique is that we really talk about the personal stories of the people of the Upper Midwest. So while we do touch on the soldiers, a little bit about the battles, it's more about other people from this area as well. And so the train car has mannequins on it. And when you sit down next to the mannequins, they'll each tell you their story of where they're headed and why. So whether it's a clergyman or a woman headed, a nurse
yeah.
going south to help out, they'll tell those personal stories. And then later in the exhibit, some of those same people are on a paddle boat headed back home, and they'll finish up that story.
Mm, very cool.
Right. And I mean, adults love it. Kids love it. It really kind of is a break from some of the reading that you might have to do in some of the exhibits.
And getting back again to how people learn or what they find to be the most comfortable way of experiencing things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And at the Civil War Museum, we have quite a few lectures too. We have our second Friday lecture coming up next week, actually, is the second Friday of the month. And every month it's a different topic related to the Civil War. But next month we're actually talking about the Lincoln's marriage. It's actually called the Lincoln Marriage, Heaven or Hell. So, yep. So each we bring in a different historian who talks about some of these nuances of that time period. And that one sounds really interesting and fun. And so that again is one of those that will be in person, but it will be recorded and put on our YouTube channel to watch later as well.
Okay, that's great to know. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to interrupt right there and ask you a little bit about the technology that you're using to share. You mentioned YouTube. How are you using some of the social media? And well, right now we're recording this via Zoom. What are you using to deliver all of these virtual or combination type learning experiences?
We use Zoom as well. We learned right off the bat that we just kind of used whatever we had accessible to us, and Zoom has definitely been the easiest, which then we've utilized Facebook as a way to show things to the public, as well as our YouTube channel and posting things on our website. So kind of all over, right?
To coordinate all of that, is that something you had done pre-pandemic, or did you have to, like you say, you had to learn pretty quick, but was it a huge learning curve? Did you have to bring somebody in to consult? Were you spending all of the time that the museum was closed doing research on how to best deliver things?
We have a really great social media manager. And so we already had, each of our museums has a Facebook page. And then we also have an Instagram and Twitter account as well. And so Brenda, our social media manager, really jumped right in as soon as we knew we were closing. And she just went forward and did lots of research and said, okay, this is how we can do this. This is the best way to reach people and just really analyzes how people are using this technology. And so when we were shut down, we used a lot of the Facebook Live to reach the community, and our viewership grew each week, which was great. And I mean, we reached people from all over really the world, but mainly all over the country here. So, and then just as everybody in the world learned about Zoom,
you know, yes.
Who knew what that was 2 years ago, right? But
really,
but yeah, I think that we kind of transitioned into some of that when we wanted people to register more for sort of more of those workshops and classes that we offer.
And it really helps us when people register or when we can see how many people are watching these. We really take a hard look at, or Brenda takes a hard look at that to identify what areas does our community want to see. And then we try to focus in more on those.
It's obvious, and I know how dedicated you are to the Kenosha community and providing the services that you do to them. But I'm also kind of intrigued when you say the world, because of course those capabilities are there. Did you find in the last year and a half or so that you had more inquiries coming into the museum from areas outside of Kenosha, perhaps, than you did before?
Yeah, I've noticed I can see some people who have interacted with us, and we've seen people from like Canada and was it Denmark and mm-hmm. just more in the Northeast, like Northeastern. We saw a large chunk of people responding and interacting with different activities. So it's really been, I don't know where anywhere else, but
right. With our websites and Facebook, it truly is all over the world. I mean, from Europe and Asia, and like Lisa said, even throughout the country that we weren't seeing before, we're now, we're used to Illinois and, you know, the other Midwest states. But yeah, reaching the East Coast has been pretty fun that they're, and not just, not just poking in now and then, they're actually engaged with us and taking some of our online classes and really just interacting, even though they may or may not have ever been here physically in the museums.
Some of the things that you've mentioned that are special, such as I'm not going to get it right, but those meat-eating dinos, that largest collection and the Civil War experiences and lectures, I could see where that would have national interest, and hopefully it might also bring some national dollars and attention to you. Mm-hmm. And this might be a good time to talk about money. I know you have a variety of ways that you're funded, but perhaps Lisa, you can tell me a little bit about where the funding for these museums comes from.
So we're very fortunate that the city has supported us a lot in the past. We do get the majority of our, like 65% of our funding comes from the city. Other than that, we still have to raise $1 million at least a year to function for all three museums. And that comes through earned revenue, so rentals, gift shop sales, admissions, memberships with our friends of the museum, and then also philanthropic dollars, so with donations and grant money and that. So $1 million is, it's a large chunk, and it was very difficult with COVID because obviously we didn't see any money come in with admissions or events and gift shop. So we really had to look at other ways to try and make up for that.
And you and everybody else. And I think that's also the challenge for any nonprofit, is everybody was hurting during COVID. So those dollars had to go a lot of directions.
Yeah, we really had to think creatively. I know we put a section of our gift shop on Amazon so people could purchase Civil War books still online while we were not open to the public. And then our friends of the museum, they were fortunate to still have a lot of people, a lot of members continue their membership, even though we were shut down for a couple months. People renewed, even though we weren't sure how long we'd be closed. So we were really blessed to see the support from our members and the community come out with that. And then of course we've had good luck with some grant writing as well, with like the Wisconsin Humanities and Kenosha Community Foundation. We've had a lot of great support from, and then Kenosha Women's Network is another one. They've supported us greatly during this time.
And that's fabulous. You hear about some of these COVID relief funds coming to communities. Did any of that trickle down into the museum, or did that have to go to other services of the city?
We did receive some assistance, especially the Wisconsin Humanities Council grant we received is part of the relief funding that we were able to apply for. And that helped out a lot.
Okay. And you mentioned the Friends of the Museum, and I also know that you can donate directly to the museums. Can you explain what the difference is?
Yeah, definitely. Our Friends of the Kenosha Museums, they're an organization that was set up to help kind of support the whole membership program here. And they're a separate 501c3, and they really are our true advocates and our ambassadors of the museums. They are the ones that, you know, kind of talk us up and tell people why they should become members of the museum. And with the membership, you get free admission at the Civil War Museum, you get a discount for workshops and programs, and a discount at the gift shop. And we have a new Facebook members only page that you can join too, and you get kind of first looks at things at the museum if you become a member, as well as getting notified of all of our programs through email. And so that's what the Friends have covered, and we're very fortunate that they continue to work with us here at the museums.
And then to have a donation to the museum itself, that's more, maybe I can call it like a capital type investment for
annual fund, we call it. So you can do, just a straight donation to the museums. We just started, we sent out our annual letter to all of our donors and anyone else that we are hopeful will keep supporting us in the future, because we're really, with having to still handle the virtual programming and in person and trying to keep everything as safe and I guess safe for everybody to come in person or continue to do virtual programming, it's really vital to continue to see this financial support from our donors.
That is terrific. So we have a few minutes left, about 5 minutes left, and I'd like to go back to reminding people what's going on. We had talked at the very start of the program about today's event, Saturday's events at the Kenosha Public Museum and at the Civil War Museum, kickoff to the holiday season. So let's talk first again about the International Holiday Market. And perhaps, Christine, you would like to address that?
Right. Yep. Again, it's the International Holiday Market. We've got several vendors here selling their food and their crafts from different cultures. The Greeks, the Italians, the Lithuanians, they're they're all here interacting with folks. And we also have our own hot cocoa bar too. So you can grab a cup of cocoa or take some with several different toppings. You could take it home with you instead and make it at home. And then there's kids activities and crafts going on throughout the museum as well. And the Mexican ballet will be performing shortly here again too.
And just a reminder for people who might have been familiar with Holiday Market from a few years ago, when it was sort of in combination with Harbor Market and a lot of it was outside. This is all inside the museum, correct?
Right. It's all right inside. Right inside the museum, the public museum.
No matter the weather, you can come enjoy this.
Yep.
Yes. Oh my gosh, that was not a nice day a couple of years ago, was it?
Right.
and let's move just a little bit north to the Civil War Museum for the Victorian Christmas.
Right. So again, there's music at the Civil War Museum, lots of holiday favorites from the Palmyra Band and the German Men's Chorus, and as well as some of those Victorian crafts and activities and making ornaments. And again, we've got those Victorian dollhouses and the Civil War miniatures on display as well.
I don't know if you know the answer to this, but I was intrigued about the German Men's Choir. Is that a local choir or a regional that was brought in?
Yeah, it's a completely local organization. My grandpa's actually part of the club. So.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of gentlemen who are from Germany who started a choir over here, and they've been around. I don't even know how long they've been around, but for as long as I know, they've been around. And they're such a fun choir to listen to and join in on maybe some of the songs too.
Well, it sounds excellent. And I thank you both for joining me today. We've been talking with Christine Camilli, who is the External Relations Manager, and Lisa Byron, who is the Development Manager of the Kenosha Public Museums. So thank you very much for sharing all the great information that you did today.
Thank you so much,
Thank you.
Jane. Thank you.
I'm Steve Brown, inviting you to join us on Saturday morning, December the 11th at 11:15 for the WGTD Radio Theater's live broadcast from Lake Lawn Resort. We're featuring stars from The Carol Burnett Show, Stan Freberg's Yulnet, and also music from Bill's Little Big Band and John Looney Paleo. Support comes from the Kenosha Law Firm of Aaliyah, Dume, and McTernan and Lake Lawn Resort. The Radio Theater, Saturday morning, December the 11th at 11:15.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
I'm Steve Brown, inviting you to join us on Saturday morning, December the 11th at 11:15 for the WGTD Radio Theater's live broadcast from Lake Lawn Resort. We're featuring stars from The Carol Burnett Show, Stan Freberg's Yulnet, and also music from Bill's Little Big Band and John Looney Paleo. Support comes from the Kenosha Law Firm of Aaliyah, Dume, and McTernan and Lake Lawn Resort. The Radio Theater, Saturday morning, December the 11th at 11:15.
Support comes from the Racine Theater Guild, bringing nostalgia, humor, and heart to the stage with A Christmas Story. Weekends through December 19th, masks will be required. For tickets and more information, visit racinetheater.org or call 262-633-4218.
Support comes from Gateway Technical College, where student success is priority. With more than 70 career programs, students graduate prepared for the career of their dreams with expert instructors, hands-on training, and dedicated support services. Learn more at gtc.edu.